So that's going to be a long day.
I'm not going to be here for the next
we'll move to the minutes of the previous meeting on the 2nd of August. I shall move them as a true and correct record. Seconded by Councillor Moon.
Seconded because I wasn't here, sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Seconded by Councillor Robertson. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Any matters arising from those minutes? Everyone happy? Okay, now we'll move on to the director's report. This is the next item on the agenda.
Saying that even though it's currently acceptable, it's
Stanley?
Take it as read. There's just an update on the annual report, which the auditors are finishing up this week. The draft of that will go to Audit and Risk next week, and then on the assumption that they are happy with it, and they recommend that it will go to Council the following week for adoption. So that's well in hand, and also just rates invoices went out last week of August, and you can see the quantum. That's general and targeted rates.
Okay, any comment on that, Councillor
Wood? I'll move the recommendations, Mr. Chairman.
Seconded by Councillor Noon. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Next one's annual return of inactive subsidiaries, 2017. I think this report explains pretty much why we keep those subsidiaries. It's strategically important. Is there any comment on this paper?
I'm happy to move the recommendations too, Mr. Chairman. It's very much procedural.
Yep.
And we have to rattle through every year.
Yep. There's a few parts to that recommendation, but it's pretty straightforward.
8AF, yeah.
Yep. Seconded by Councillor Neil. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Next one, review of grants. At the Finance and Court Committee on the 3rd of May, it was a request that we have a review of the grants, and we resolved to receive a report, and that is this report. Yes, that's probably all I want to say about that, but it lists the background to these grants. It's quite a significant paper, why they are there, and also lists the grants that have been made recently, and a lot of it is around the Environmental Enhancement Fund. Any comment on this paper, please?
Thank you. Just a general question. Do these grants come out of a general rate, or are they targeted? In particular, interested in the water management.
Most of them come out of reserves. The Environmental Enhancement Fund is reserve funded. There's a transfer from the general reserve to a specific reserve for that, $250,000 every year. The other one that is significant is the water management reserve. So that's a dedicated separate reserve which has, I think, approximately $1.4 million in it. So that's been there for, that was created, I think, from the paper back in 2012. That reserve was originally called the Bulk Rural Water Fund, but it's the Water Management Reserve now.
It was 2012, yep.
But it does have an annual input into that reserve.
No, it doesn't have any money being transferred into it. It just it will get topped up. It will receive its share of any investment returns. So it will get a small amount because that you earn from having $1.4 million invested.
And we've got two main projects under that banner at the moment. Up to Laws.
When I raised this issue some months ago, which is the reason we've got this report, the reason that we were going to have it, and there was widespread agreement around the table, was that we actually wanted to know not only what grants were we providing, but whether or not they were an effective use of ratepayers' money. And that is recognised in the opening statement of this report, that we wanted to receive a report on the effectiveness and outcomes of the grants provided. I have to say I'm disappointed with this paper because it doesn't actually address that first question, which this is a list basically of what we do. It's not an analysis of whether or not it's been effective at all. And so for me, I think we're still missing that piece of the jigsaw puzzle that allows us any degree of confidence that grants that we make are effectively utilised. It's a basic governance 101 function. You give out the money and then you assess whether or not it's been, it's effective in its allocation. So I'm going to raise this issue with you, Mr. Chairman. I want an effectiveness review. Is the money we've spent done the job we set out to do? Was it an effective use of ratepayers' money? And this report doesn't actually address that issue, which was the reason why we raised the issue to start with.
Well, I would have thought at the end of the day it is up to the governance team to do that at some stage, and as mentioned in the paper, a lot of these grants have been made late in 15-16 and we're still to receive the initial report back. So, I guess it's up to the governance team to make that assessment as we go forward. Councillor, Mr. Bailey.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The Carrera-Era report is the first one we funded and it's just completed its first 12 months. And the conditions with which we fund amounts under $50,000 is that they report on a 12-month basis, grants over $50,000 on a 6-month basis. So the Carrera-Era report is in our hands and it will be reported at the through the Chief Executive's report at Council meeting. So the rest of them, we are asking for those reports. So the HALO report, they are due for a 6-month report, so that process of requesting that or receiving that is in place. But the rest of them haven't done their 12 months yet, so we're not expecting a report from those people.
No, and you see, that's my problem, Peter, with your response. You're saying that you're receiving the report from the groups that you're receiving. What I'm not hearing is any independent analysis from ORC as to whether or not that expenditure has been appropriate, A, well, we can serve, that's the first thing. Second, has it been effective from our point of view? Now, getting a report from a group that you've been given the money to is not proper analysis. It's not an examination of effectiveness. It doesn't do the job that we're required to do. And that's why I am saying, I'm going to ask you, Peter, how do you analyse, rather than receive the report from the grantees that you are about to or have, that has been appropriate? I mean, gosh, anybody can say anything they like. At the end of the day, giving a report
from a strategic level.
They report on activity. Some of these grants are relatively small, and if this council is requesting us as a management team, either within the organisation or independently, to audit these grants, then I think this council would need to have a conversation about whether that is cost effective in and of itself. And I'm not saying that we give out money and then forget about it. I think once you read the report on the Falcon study, it will be evident that the work that this person has done with a group of volunteers has got merit. It certainly answers the question that it was set out to ask. Now, I'm not sure how you will see that as to whether it's effective or not. Everybody's going to have a different view about effectiveness. I will give you a summary based on that person's report in my response. But are you asking for them to be either internally or externally audited against a set of audit criteria? Because that's what I'm hearing you ask.
Well, to answer your question, yes, I would think that you would be doing an audit of the money that you're expending. I would have thought that that's basic stuff, to be perfectly honest with you. And whether it's a small grant or a large grant, it's the responsibility of us to audit the effectiveness of the money we spend. And again, I go back to, what was the resolution of this council? the resolution of this council was to receive a report on the effectiveness of each grant. There it is, black and white, including bulk water grants at the end of the financial year ending the 30th of June. So effectiveness to me definitely is a synonym for audit.
Councillor Robertson.
Thanks for those points. And for the report, there's definitely some very interesting projects that were funded there, and great to see community uptake of these grants. That's very pleasing from a governance point of view to see that there has been a need, and it looks as though, from my perspective, they have been useful. However, you do have to ask yourself, as a governance team, are we managing these funds as well as we possibly could? And I suppose the questions for us that are appropriate are, have we got the criteria right? And I think, having reviewed the Water Management Fund, I think that sits about right at the moment. We reviewed that in 2014 and it wasn't sitting right at that point, but I feel comfortable with the criteria at the moment. I think the Environmental Enhancement Fund, we'll probably tweak those criteria going forward as we develop pest and biodiversity strategies, so it's a bit clearer what our priorities as a council are. So I think that will be tweaked. Then I ask myself, what's the reporting criteria? And I hear that we're requiring 6 monthly for some and annually for others. But I think probably as a governance team, we do need to perhaps spell that out a bit clearer to the applicants, what we're requiring from them to report back. And then hearing what Councillor Laws says, I think what he's suggesting is something like then the reporting, which is consistent and clear and picks, they can quite easily answer all the stuff that we need. It then perhaps goes to audit and risk, just to check that we have ticked the boxes. If that's what he's saying, that might be the appropriate place for it to go. I don't know if we need to go through every detail, but we need to make sure that it's gone through that process and that we have met reporting criteria. Agree with that. That's fine. He's got a point there.
Thank you. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I'd like to just reaffirm the comments from Councillor Laws and Councillor Robinson. I don't think this is an issue that we should get defensive about. This is... as has been pointed out, this is, governance 101. And in fact, Nick was going to say the same thing about the traffic light report, in terms of, at the end of the day, yes, we've done the work, but how effective actually is it? And I agree with Councillor Robinson. Let's build upon the work in the biodiversity that we're doing, the reference group, the pest group, this type of thing. And ideally out of that, we'll be able to, as Councillor Robinson said, set the priorities and be able to review where the best bangs for the bucks need to be. When I look incrementally at all these projects, I actually thought they're all wonderful projects, just for the record. But strategically, effectiveness, I'm not sure. In some ways, a fund like this can sort of be a keep the community happy type of fund. I'm not sure. We've for whatever reason, I can never understand it, we've delegated it to staff to go through those projects less than $50,000. But, yeah, in summary, let's not be defensive about it. That's certainly a question we've got to ask ourselves. But there's some wonderful projects in there.
I guess, to be fair, there's probably two elements here. Is maybe it should go through the Audit and Risk Committee from a financial perspective, that the money has been properly spent. And then the other issue is, are the benefits from what we require,
exactly,
is another separate issue. And indeed, when we get future applications, I would encourage the CEO to bring those applications to council, even if they're below $50,000,
yes,
so to give us more assurance that they are worthwhile and benefit this council.
Thank you.
Councillor Noon.
It's pretty much all been said by the two previous speakers, and I support what Councillor Laws is saying, and clearly with the two major funds, the Water Management Fund and the Enhancement Environmental Enhancement Fund. They've clearly got criteria and the others haven't. So the staff have actually brought the report based on the policies that currently exist. So there's no good suggesting that the report is inadequate. It's basically reports around the policies that we've got around these funds, and where the policy doesn't exist around a fund, staff can't create it. So we've got a responsibility there. So I absolutely agree and endorse what's been said. And I'm sure Councillor Laws will move some recommendation in a moment.
Councillor Laws.
Thank you. It's a good report to see where the money's been spent, but I agree it would be really good to follow up order and risk in terms of the effectiveness, possibly against the likes of the community outcomes or in our long-term plan, to see if we're actually achieving some of those long-term strategic visions that we've got. I realise this is a report, but I think going forward, in terms of the water management reserve, there is potential that we're going to have quite a large uptake of that, or requests for more funding going forward. I think if we're looking at communities, I was wondering whether or not even the report from for Cadrona will have the Cadrona community stepping forward to ask for some money for feasibilities. Or any other communities for that matter. And I was just wondering if we've turned our mind to that, or if we see that there's more uptake coming, likely to come up.
Well, I guess it's sitting there, available for application. Community groups think that's appropriate. Mr. Bodica?
Is it first in, first served? Is that
The Community Water Fund, as councillors will know, is being used to fund much of the deemed permit renewal, extension and education activity. So half of the additional funding of that comes out of that reserve. I think the intention of council was to wind that reserve down. So I'm not aware of other communities who are thinking of feasibility studies for irrigation schemes, and if it's Cadrona, well, we need to have a conversation. But it was my understanding that the will of council was to wind that reserve down on the basis that we may not be in that activity in the future. But that's something that council need to advise us on at management, if that's in fact now not the case. Second point is that all of those applications do come to council. The ones that we've approved that are under 50,000, they come through my report. So council has seen all of those reports apart from the first two that were done prior to council asking for that. So, the other question I'd like to ask council is to whether or not some of the other biodiversity work that we funded through the annual plan needs the same degree of rigour. Mm. We put $200,000 in Wilding Pines. We put, I think from memory, $25,000 into Lagra Siphon. We put a large amount of money into wallabies. These are all very similar to some of these activities. And, do you want us to put that? Because I'm trying to work out how we're going to resource this. I don't think we can resource it through existing staffing. And if we're going to add some of these other things to it, then I think we need to know what council's requirements are.
Councillor Bell.
Three, Mr. Chairman. I have been on two trusts, Central Lakes Trust and the Otago Community Trust, and there is a way of reporting back, and I'm just wondering whether we could have a look at their formula on how they do that, and they may be able to help, because all those organisations there, some of those actually that I see here, have applied for grants inside, not maybe on this particular projects, but have applied as organisations for grants on those two trusts. So there is a reporting way back, in a way of auditing that process. So it maybe we can get a bit of follow-up on how they do that.
Councillor Kenton.
First of all, just following up from Councillor, right out of my head. Councillor Bell. Thank you. When people are reporting, first of all, when we're talking about whether it meets our objectives, whether it aligns with our strategies or plans, we should have decided that before we gave anybody any money.
Correct. Right.
Right. So put that aside. that's not an issue.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to audit, the thing we've got to be really careful about here is that I remember when we had a $250,000 fund and we said, we'll give the chief executive discretion around allocation from that fund, and then I suppose and at the same time the chief executive will determine whether or not that fund was being expended. Then we said, oh no, we're not sure we like that, it's 50. Now we're down to 3,817. Now where the hell is this going to end? Because to my mind, everybody who gives out a bit of money says, we want a report. Somebody in the organisation opens up the report and says, yep, okay, the Wakatipu Island Reforestation Fund wanted some shovels and stuff. And there's some pictures in the report that shows you what they did with the shovels, right? And they read that. They make a judgment about whether or not their leg's being pulled. If it isn't, it's fine. If the evidence is there, and if they think their leg's being pulled, they might give them a call and say, you had me wrong, fella. That's surely something that can be delegated to staff. And this whole idea of audit, all audit says, that is audit, and all more formal audit says to me is more bureaucracy. And so we've started off by saying, yep, full discretion, then, oh, maybe 50,000, as I say, now down to 3,800. We've got to get real about this. What's our real business here?
Councillor Woodhead.
Well, for the second time today, thank you, Councillor Kempton. The key point we've got to put in place is the criteria which the funds are applied to. And then Mr. Budecker needs to see a 6-month or 12-monthly report. So if they're going to get some funds for fencing a waterway, for example, then I would expect a photograph of the fence, or even maybe one of Mr. McLean's staff members views the fence on the way past one day, but or the shovels purchased or whatever it is. But the critical part from my perspective is that we line it up in the criteria so that the applicants understand where it fits in with what we're trying to achieve. And then some sort of evidence to the chief executive that what they said they were going to do, they've done. And that's not hard to monitor. It shouldn't need too much in the way of staff resources and a 6-monthly or 12-monthly report from the chief executive to appropriate committee. Let's get on with it.
Councillor Lawton.
You think you accept that for the $3,817 for the $544,000 or the $132,000, for example, are much bigger projects, and I would expect that there is some sort of difference. I mean, if it,
yep.
I completely agree. If we're not going to, the CE has that delegated power to up to $50,000. I mean, that seems like a quite clear cut-off about where you would have a different level of reporting back as well.
This is exactly what the two trusts have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I say move then? And the word audit isn't in the sense that of a corporate audit. It's another word for an effectiveness review. All right? So my motion would be that an effectiveness audit of each ORC grant be provided to the council when relevant and available. And that way, for each grant that we get, we will get that report that will come in as is required, and then we'll know. But the simple thing, can I just say, in moving this motion is, we ask two simple questions. Did it work? And did we get good value for money for the Otago ratepayer? Those are two simple questions that you answer. Did the money go to the end that was achieved, and did it actually do some good? And did we get good value for the Otago regional ratepayer? Pretty simple questions to ask.
So could you repeat that?
That an effectiveness audit be provided for each Otago Regional Council grant to the council when relevant and available. That then means that when the 6-month year term expires, it comes into the thing.
Mr. Bodie, from your perspective.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yep. Any discussion on that?
Well, it hasn't been seconded yet, but I'm not against the motion, except to me the word audit should, the review, audit should be replaced by review. Because audit to me conjures up.
I guess to answer that question, Sam, it is sort of an audit. it really is. It's an effectiveness review, and that the strict dictionary definition of an audit would be that. If you want me to use the word effectiveness review instead of audit, I'm happy to do so, if that makes it more explicit and plain. I'm in the lap of my colleagues.
Ms. McLean?
What would you think, Trevor? Effectiveness review or audit?
Through the chair, just some of the grants are for pest control, predator control related projects, and I'm sure many of you are aware that there are rigorous scientific methodologies for establishing pest excess. To get those audits undertaken to a high degree that you want, it's very expensive. So in terms of assessing effectiveness of predator control, you need to establish a baseline. So that costs a lot of money to do that. And then potentially every 12 months or so. So I'm thinking the HALO project, it would probably cost about much to a grant undertake an annual effectiveness report. If you looked at the community engagement aspect of that, that's much easier to quantify. They've got huge community buy-in, and that's successful, but the effectiveness of lowering the pest numbers requires standardised scientific methodology to be applied, to be rigorous. And so just something to bear in mind. No problem get doing that, but it will need to be resourced.
Can I answer that question? I'd be surprised if you didn't do it. I would almost regard it as a dereliction of duty if you didn't actually work out whether or not the programs that you were spending money on were effectively spent. And if you're not doing the audit, then what are you doing? You're simply throwing money at an issue and going, well, the community's bought into it, we'll go away. It's, you know, like I say, it's sort of governance 101. If you spend money on something in large money, particularly on pests, you expect to see, is it working? Anyhow, that's not the motion. That an effectiveness review of each ORC grant be provided to the Council when relevant and available is the motion.
Okay, we have a seconder for that, please, Councillor Bell. Any further discussion on that? Councillor Scott.
I think the point that's been raised is a reasonable point, you know, to determine the effectiveness of a grant. But just, you know, to reply to Scott's point that, hey, we may have to spend, you know, the same amount of money determining the effectiveness, as you know, compared to the grant. That's obviously an unreasonable situation. So I would suggest to anybody that's determining the effectiveness that they, you know, they look at smart ways of doing that. And if cost is an issue, then they might have to, you know, simplify some of their expectations. But nevertheless, you know, as a governance, we need some type of feedback. But you know, that doesn't mean we've just got to throw money.
Well, I think probably the criteria should direct people in that direction.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe we need to have a bit of a look at the criteria to make sure it's quite clear in that regard.
Mr. Chairman, I've just been reading on the front page of our website the rationale, objectives, eligibility, criteria, how to apply, etc., for this fund. Very detailed. There's about 20 bullet points there which are clear guidance to applicants and recipients of these grant monies as to what they are expected to achieve with them. Now, I think this motion is jumping way ahead of where we need to be. The Chief Executive, early on in this debate, explained that he is going to be receiving reports from these organisations on what they have done with the money in terms of the conditions set on for the fund. I would hold this motion until those reports come in, because they may well satisfy us as the governors that everything is tickety-boo. If something isn't, then we can request the CE to have a close look at what isn't tickety-boo. But to have a blanket expectation that every one of these things should be analysed for effectiveness is pie-in-the-sky stuff.
Any further comment? Well, for me, in some ways, this is quite a generic statement, and I think it's open to interpretation by staff to ensure we do get value and from the report. So I'm supportive of the motion on that regard. I think it is open to interpretation, but we've just got to be careful that we do things right. and that reinforces that. Any other comment?
Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification. The HALO project, remember we are co-funders in the HALO project. There are other funders from memory to a greater extent than ours, the combined funding, I can't quite remember, but it's a big amount of money. And there is scientific review, as Mr. McLean said, in that report, and I think we are doing it. I think Mr. McLean's comment was that some of these things, if we're going to do them to a degree that is unequivocal, are expensive. The HALO project has that in it. There will be an assessment of effectiveness undertaken by us, and that's built into that HALO project, remembering it's a bigger fund than just our contribution.
The other thing I also think, some of these projects are quite big, and open time to time management bring items to the audit and risk committee, and I think of the material amounts of money, maybe they should be go through the audit and risk committee occasionally, just to keep us all happy and assured. Sorry. Yep. Any other comment? Well, if not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
No.
Carried. Right. And there's one other recommendation for support we received. I'll move in that regard. Thank you, Councillor Noon. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Next item on what time's lunch?
One.
Okay, we'll get this. Rattle through this. The next item on is the review of the Manahiakea irrigation funding. Basically, this report sets out the reason for that funding and the amounts that have been provided since 2012-13, and what it was for. Basically, largely it's around feasibility issues of this project, assisting in that regard. So I open this report up for discussion. Councillor Woodyard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. this fund and the funding of this project in particular was seen as a significant challenge for community. It's a big chunk of, I think, around 50% of our 1C deemed permits. A large block of land that has operated in distinct irrigation companies and groups for 150 odd years, and we understood clearly as a council, and in fact so did community, because there was a strong initiative driven out of the community needing or asking for some support to look at ways of or to explore ways of better water management into the future and working through the transition that we know is coming up in 2021. So again, as Mr. Bodek has just pointed out, with some of our other projects under the Environmental Enhancement Fund, we're co-funders here along with landholders and along with Crown Irrigation and or the several Crown funds, So yes, it's a large sum of money, but it's a large valley. There's large blocks of work, quite detailed and complicated scenarios to work through. And I think obviously council agreed at the time it was appropriate to assist and encourage thinking and investigation and detailed work to inform future water management decisions. So communities on their own often really struggle with some of this and need some encouragement and leadership. I'll leave it there at this point. I might have some further comments to make later.
Yeah, I think the point you emphasised, the fact that it's linked in with 1C, it does make it such a very complicated situation to resolve as we go forward.
Yep.
Councillor Laws.
Again, I raise this issue because this has turned into all a bit of a nightmare. And there is, I must report to you, as I'm sure Councillor Bell will as well, considerable upset, anxiety, use what adjective you like, in the community as to the future of this project in general. Now, again, I mean, I'll go back to basic principles here. The question is, has this been an effective use of Otago ratepayers' money? And I'd have big question marks around that. Is this, at the end of the day, essentially a public subsidy of private interest? And I think you could reasonably argue that it is. What was the purpose of this? This purpose is to provide a private end, and a pretty clear private and commercial end. And you said, I'm sure that's a philosophical debate we'll have on another day. The issue is, for me now, is, well, the money's been spent. What we do know is that the Manuhiri Care Group, or elements within it, have become very vocal in the last wee while, in the last few months, about what they perceive as almost a betrayal of their interests by the Otago Regional Council. Now, that's a perception that they have published and is available widely. Whether or not it's correct, I doubt. But the truth is that I'm really interested in, well, the money's gone, literally. Was it effectively spent? Did it come to an end? It doesn't seem much more advanced than it was when it first started, from an outside perspective. The question is now, how do we go forward from here? And that's one of the things that we really need to address with this report. I note on the bullet point on page 19, the last one, is that the funding be at the discretion of the Chief Executive. Now, I'm sorry, I wasn't here in September 2014 when Council passed this motion, but dear Lord, that's wrong, and we need to change that. Any future funding, I would have thought, of this particular program needs to come to the full council. And we need to discuss that only when we've got a review as to, is the money being appropriately spent? Have we gained some effectiveness? Where are we with the show? All those sorts of things. You would have read Gray Shatsky's piece, a relatively prominent member of the Manukiri here catchment group in the Otago Daily Times, I think it was published on Saturday, who expresses, perhaps in a little more reserved way, some of the misgivings of that particular community. And we know that the Central Otago District Council are now involved in this issue politically. Okay. Can I say that we can receive this report, but I'm still waiting for an effectiveness review? As far as we're concerned, you know, what have we got for our $74,000, Stephen? It's about that? $574,000?
Yes, it's reported there, isn't it?
$544,000. What have we got for it? Are we really any further progressed? Was it a good investment? And are we going to make that investment going forward? But I do think we need to change one thing here straight away, that the future funding of this program and project cannot be at the discretion of the Chief Executive. Now, I don't know, Peter, it's no comment upon you, but I don't know what the original motion was in September 2014, but any further funding that we give to this project has got to be made around this council table after a pretty good debate and some fairly clear evidence and information provided to us. So I would like to change that particular issue and move accordingly. But I do think we need a discussion about, okay, where are we with this? And are we satisfied that we've spent the money appropriately and effectively?
Mr. Robertson.
Thank you, and thank you for the report again. It does have a background of the reserve in general and then goes into the Manuhiri Care detail and doesn't outline other funding that we have allocated, which is fine. I'm pretty sure that was what was requested. But, thinking about this going forward, I think we probably do need to formalise something about where we're heading with this grant. And I think, as you iterated before, it doesn't need to be a big deal, but we do need to formalise what we're thinking. Mr Bodecker outlined that we were sort of intending to wind it back, but we haven't actually formalised that. And we do need to do that. So I think, you know, thinking would be that some of the funding goes to the 1C deemed permit educational type activities. Well, the criteria for the reserve doesn't actually say that at the moment. And also that we wind it back towards 2021 when we perhaps don't have the fund anymore, but we haven't formalised that either. So hear what is being said by Councillor Laws, the discretion of the Chief Executive, yeah, probably for his own sake as well. Totally open discretion, I think, probably is a bad idea as well. I think it should be capped, perhaps, at the 50,000 again, myself. But, yeah, I think we need to bring this back and do think about where we're going and formalising it over the next few years.
Mr. Bodega, I'll call on you.
Yeah, I mean, the question that Councillor Laws quite appropriately raised about private gain is a very good question. And had these irrigation, should this irrigation scheme go ahead, there will be some private gain. We, though, as a council, don't just provide activity, funding for activity that assists private gain in this area. We're spending many hundreds of thousands of dollars in the change from deemed permit to RMA, consent. And we are assisting, physically assisting, those water users to get from where they are now to a new spot. That is assisting a personal gain. We've done that in subsidies for clean heat, a personal gain. We do that in education so that people can adhere to the rules. There is a personal gain in that. Now, there are wider benefits in all of those. There are environmental benefits, there are compliance benefits, and the point of this irrigation scheme, the Manuhura Kia, which, as Councillor Woodhead has said, is a very big and complex geographic area and hydrological area, was so we could assist, I think it's 8 irrigation groups, try and work collectively to get to a common end, which was a more efficient use of water. The environmental benefits were that we felt that there would be more water flowing in the tributaries and down the Manuhura Kia River. So that was an aim from our perspective. We also had the deemed permit renewal. So that was the reason why when I came into this role that we were supportive of that, and I think we have been very successful in getting a community together to have a discussion about how they may undertake those activities. Improved water efficiency, cooperation within a community, a big community, and environmental gains that we were going to get. The reports, and there are massive numbers of reports that we would not insult this council by appending to your agenda, are available on their website. And if you want to go and look at the detail, the scientific, economic, social detail of all of those reports that we have assisted to fund, I suggest you do, because they are valuable. They will never be lost. That information is a record of what has happened. The fact that the community may be at a point of not proceeding is their right to agree. But they're doing it incredibly well informed, and it's because organisations like ourselves and central government and the farmers have all invested. So it's not just us that's invested in that. The Irrigation Acceleration Fund has invested, and they have had criteria to review, and we have coattailed on a lot of that work. So none of this investment that I made under my discretion was not done without a conversation with the Chief Executive or one of his officers in the Irrigation Acceleration Fund. So by way of background, I believe it's been valuable. The information is there for the record and for you to read. If the CE's discretion is changed, I think you need to do it for all of the discretionary grants. You know, to be quite honest, if because 50,000 is, you know, there are councillors around this table who are not happy with $50,000 worth of discretion. So if you've got, you know, if you want to, you know, essentially you fund all of the activity through the annual plan agreement, and then I have delegations, as do my directors. I think this conversation that we've heard today with both of these grants means that you want to have discretion over all of them. And if that's the case, then you need to make that call, because there is concern around the table at all levels of discretionary spending by the chief executive.
Councillor Woodhead.
It was a good sum up from Mr. Bodecker, actually, and filled in some gaps that was a good reminder. Part of our long-term plan process is a review of funding policies. And that's when that sort of discussion should occur, in my view. And so we get a chance to understand the criteria and where it's trying to fit in our whole program, and if we're going to fund something and where we're going to fund it from. So, and that's not far away.
I agree with that. And, well, it's interesting, we've been there before with the Lindis investment in the Lindis scheme.
Yes.
We backed out of that. So yeah, it does need to look at.
Yeah, and the menu at Kia, I mean, 5-6 years ago now when we started that work, and there was other catchments that have had some assistance. You know, things change. We're at a different stage, and 2021's just around the corner, and community's got a lot more information to base their decisions on, and so it's only natural that these sorts of funds in this case, or assistance, will evolve or change or have their day.
Well, I think the landscape, even at a national level, has changed.
That's correct.
Well, I mean, if the idea is that we have that discussion during the long-term plan regards the chief executive's delegation, then that's fine. But on this particular issue, I would like to move that any further funding of the Manuhiri Care Catchment Water Strategy Group, any further funding applications relating to the Manukura Kias Catchment Water Strategy Group, be brought before council. So that just clarifies that for now, and from henceforward, from today, or from the next council meeting, if there is any further funding applications, it comes to here. I think that would be very useful, because it would allow us to discuss the future of the scheme.
Mr. Bodecker, where are we sort of in terms of our...
I think the Manuhiri Care Irrigation Group has passed the feasibility stage, so I would be very surprised if they would make any further application for funding.
Not expecting any?
I'm not expecting any from Manuhiri Care.
No.
We have got the Strathtyre, though, that are at the revisiting, so that's noted in there. You know, they are in a... exactly the same situation as Manuhiri Care on a significantly smaller scale, but the reason that I have supported their application for funding is it fulfills the criteria. It will provide environmental benefits should it succeed. So this council perhaps might like to, in light of the proposed motion, consider whether that's all of these grants ahead of the time, because otherwise we'll end up having a similar conversation potentially with the Strathtyre funding than that we are having now.
Councillor Bell.
Mr. Chairman, I think the Manuhiri Care Catchment Water Group's actually finished. I get the minutes, and they're going to go forward and forming a company. I just want to reiterate that around that table, I attended probably 3 or 4 of their meetings, but most times their meetings were always held when we either had meetings down here, committee or council, on the same day. And maybe, I pointed it out here at one meeting, we should have had representation sitting on those meetings, not necessarily a council or, but an employee. I also want to say that part of that community, as quite rightly pointed out by Chief Executive, was made up of Dock, Iwi Fishing Game, Targa Heritage, which was Grey Shackley, and the CODC. The Mayor attended all those meetings that he was able to attend. So it was a wider community base, that group. It wasn't just about principally the irrigators, even though that was the achievement, but it was all about 2021 and about going forward. And also New Zealand Irrigation were represented on that committee also. So they were all there around that table. It just wasn't specifically those irrigators that were going to achieve the end result. But I just can't get my computer to work at the moment properly here. But I've got a report back from Alan Kane, because I thanked him for being the chair. He's now resigned, and that, as far as I know, it's finished. Yeah. But we should, I felt, and I had asked before, that we should have had them back here giving us a round-up here in this in these chambers, and to me that would have been the appropriate thing to have happened without us fumbling through today.
Mr. Bogie. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kane, as the chair of that group, did report to this council on at least one occasion in a workshop, so he has presented where they were up to at the time. But you're right, and I did represent Otago Regional Council on that committee many times. But you're right, in the latter part of it, by accident, I'm sure, Councillor Bell, those meetings did clash with council or committee meetings.
Councillor Scott.
I would support Councillor Law's motion. If you made a generic motion, yeah, in relation to, not specifically at the Menuhiri Care, that any applications to this fund are brought to council.
Happy to do that.
The water management, applications to the water management reserve,
yeah,
we're talking about.
I can't remember, 5 years ago whether I supported that particular fund or not, but I certainly can recognise that, yes, it was private benefit, but at the time, there was some expectation that there would be community benefit, as Mr. Bodek has sort of pointed out. But from that time as a councillor, I felt disconnected to that particular scheme or any of those schemes, because one, from a governance perspective, we're not involved in the committee, we're not even involved in the sign-off of these incremental payments. And in fact, we had a situation here one time where even the councillor at the time, there seemed to be uncertainty whether the group was getting money or not. And that's a matter of, record. I think we've put our CE in a particularly difficult situation. On the CE is a member of the committee. He's just confirmed, he's a member of the committee, and then has to sign off the OSC's funding. It seemed to me if we're delegating our staff to be on a committee, that we should at least have some independence in terms of the funding decision. I think we've put our CE in a particularly difficult situation. And I will support Councillor Law's motion if he makes it generic.
So the motion, would the read then, Mr. Chair, that any further funding from the OIC's water management reserve be approved by the full council?
Yeah, that's quite clear. Have a second, please, Councillor Scott. Any further discussion?
I'm happy with that. I think this has been a very good discussion. Points that Councillor Scott has just made, and I want to go back to Councillor Bell and suggest that I still think it would be a very good idea if Mr. Kane and a couple of the other sector representatives from the Manuhiri Care group came and gave us, if it's a wind-up report, then that's what we should have.
Yep.
And I'd rather they did that face-to-face so we can talk about it, so we can question them, so we can learn from this experience to make sure we don't have any, what is the word, difficulties, I suppose, with this Bathtairi operation, because I'm keen to see that work and I don't want it to go off the tracks at all. So I think a wind-up from the Manuhiri Care people would be particularly useful. I'd love to hear that. And have the chance to talk to them about it.
Good point.
I think everyone would probably support that, I suspect. Councillor Noon.
Just two comments. One is the funding criteria for any of the other funders that help to fund feasibility studies and preliminary studies for irrigation schemes will require an assessment against not only economic but environmental, cultural and social benefits. So just picking up on Councillor Laws, I think that at the end of the day, all funders will require cross the board assessment to the benefits. It won't just be the direct benefits, on farm benefits. That was one point. Second point is, if these decisions will come back
to council to decide as per the motion that's been moved and seconded. RMA decisions, we probably need to be mindful when they come back to the table that if commissioners were going to sit on hearings in the future, it's probably something we'd want to sit back from. We wouldn't want to be seen to be supporting a feasibility study and then sitting on an RMA decision about minimum flows, for example.
Well, we sort of had that already with the Linda situation, probably. So.
With respect, Mr. Chair, the first point of Councillor Noon's, if you go into that the Water Group's website, and I did that 5 minutes ago, it's quite phenomenal, the depth of research, science, the work that they have done to meet your expectation is very impressive.
I guess in some ways the jury's still out as to this is whether this money has been well spent, and that we will only know when we have the final outcome or things are resolved.
That's
in
what
that
I'd
year.
Like to talk to them about.
Yep.
What do
yep.
they get out of this?
Yep.
Where are they going now on the basis of that?
Okay, we must keep pushing on. Councillor Scott?
Just in relation to Councillor Noon's point, you know, potential conflict between RMA and so forth, I don't know if I agree with that. I can't see any issue with councillors who are RMA accredited voting whether a feasibility study should go forward or not. I can't see any issue with that. It's not indicating any presumption of bias or whatever, or the outcome or whatever.
Councillor Scott, those who are accredited aren't going to get a vote on this.
Sorry?
Are you suggesting that the rest of us who are not RMA accredited are not going to have a say on this?
No, not at all, Councillor Deacon. Okay, what I'm saying is we should all be able to vote on it without it biasing who is the commissioner in the future.
I think this is a side issue, so...
there was a shot across the bows and I was addressing it.
Given these reports are going to be used, I'm guessing, in the consenting process, but they would... I mean, that information's open for either the council or the community to use as part of their submission. So...
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, we must move on. We've got a new motion plus the recommendation that this report be received. I'll take them together. All those in favour, please. I better move the. I know we'll take them together. The same people move them. If that's okay.
Right.
Councillor Scott. We'll put the motion. The two motions. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Right. Next paper is public transport update. Basically, this looks at the Dunedin network changes for the 18th of September. Bus hub, public transport. App being launched in Queenstown, and the mentions the tenders for units 6 and 7 for Queenstown public transport. Mr. Colling, have you got anything to comment
on this? The only comment I made is this report to the chair is we're not quite in a position to announce the Queenstown tender is not negotiations.
Yep. Mr. Donnelly, anything to add? No. Okay, any discussion on this?
I'll move the report we received.
Okay, take that. Seconded by Councillor Lawton. Councillor Lawton?
Just a question in terms of the proposal for free bus rides on the 22nd to celebrate Car Free Day. Has a decision been made whether or not to go ahead with that?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, yes, there has, and yes, we will.
Good.
Provide free buses. So.
Excellent. That announcement.
Is there such a thing?
Can someone define free?
Yes.
Free for the user. Communications going out there. Great.
Just to be clear, that'll be in Dunedin.
Oh.
So it's not Wakatipu because that's commercial operation there.
Yeah. I realise that.
So it's just Dunedin.
Just checking.
With the election day of the following day, is there any particular party that's sponsoring?
Councillor Woodhead?
Disappointing to see the bus hub in Dunedin, the planning process slip us back to January 18. How much risk around that is there, Mr. Donnelly? Where are we?
Through you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I mean, it is a statutory process, so they have to go through it. With the time of when the hearings are, following that and coming back to their council and then this council, there's just no way that, at the earliest, it would be very pre-Christmas. And Mr. Collins has made made it clear with the various shop owners there that we're not going to interrupt that pre-Christmas period. So there's really no other option but to push it back till after the new year.
Righto. So likely start time operational March, April, autumn 2018. Mm-hmm. Right. Can I supplement a question, further question, Mr. Chairman? Is that causing us any issues with the new system and the route changes and the likes? It was all at one point, I can remember, we were going to be lined up at similar time frames.
It does mean we'll get more buses running to
we might do it 10 years.
The reality is we were never going to run all the services through bus park on any particular day. It will be a progressive roll through.
Yep.
So there's always going to be a little bit of time when we get ability or some need to run 25 pitches.
Any further comment? Councillor Diggett.
Yeah, acknowledging the delay in the bus hub, which is outside the control of this council, I want to say on the basis of this report, very well done to Gerard and his team. I think this is building momentum. It is imaginative. It's pretty cutting edge stuff. I think we can be very proud of the staff who have done this, and that includes those who have done an extraordinarily good job in communicating the bus changes. And I see Eleanor sitting at the back, and I know you've had a lot to do with this. I was going to make this comment in the Communications Committee, but I'll say it now. I think this, as a package of essential reform, is something we can so far be very proud of and have high hopes for. I've had some really good feedback about the new timetables. I think I passed that on to some people around this table, that the people at the EyeSight, for example, here in Dunedin, are excited about the new timetables because it's making their job in getting visitors and tourists around the city so much more straightforward. People can understand what the routes are, where they want to go, how long they want to stay there, how they're going to get back, what kind of round trips they can do. Very good feedback indeed. So I think we can be pretty pleased with the way this is all going, and I congratulate Gerard and his colleagues. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Nice to hear that. Any further comment? If not, I'll put the motion to report we received. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. The next report is the 12-month review. Basically, this is the formal review of the projects throughout the year. Obviously, we have the 4 and 8 month interim reviews on the way through. It's a very comprehensive report. Mr. Donnelly?
It is a comprehensive report. This forms the statement of service performance that goes into the annual report, so this forms the beginning of the annual report with the financial statements after it. So this is the detail around the activities that council has undertaken and where we've got to on all of those. Again, uses the traffic light system to indicate whether we've achieved it or not. There is the amber is generally indicates that activity is underway, but is usually ongoing and will carry on into this financial year and potentially future years as well.
Yeah, I've got to say the executive summary is a very good report. Any comments on this now? There's a lot in here. Okay, Councillor Scott.
Yeah, look, I'll make it quick because I say the same thing every time I read this report. Look, there's obviously been a lot of good work, but just following on from the previous discussions, hey, we've got a green light, but how effective has it actually been? For example, Rabbit's achievement to June, we've followed up all the various plans and so forth, but how are we tracking with Rabbit in terms of where we want to be? Would we really give ourselves a green light? Sure, staff have implemented the tasks that were agreed something like 18 months ago, well done, and we need some type of formal process to, you know, to acknowledge that. I accept that. But just going back, you know, 18 months on from when that decision was made, how effective have these strategies actually been? Just leave it at that.
I think that's what this discussion is all about. We don't, yeah. Councillor Lawton?
Just because that was actually one particular example that highlighted, I guess, the challenge of this sort of reporting is under the level of rabbit populations on page 40 of the combined, you know, it has a green light, but then it also goes on to say that actually the number of inspections have been decreased because of staff limits in terms of time. So was it a green light because that's as many as we could get to, rather than is it a green light because actually we managed to achieve them all? So I guess it's not clear as to actually how effective it's been.
Mr. McLean, you got a comment on that?
Through the chair, the green light relates to the performance targets.
Yeah.
Not the number of inspections, and we achieved the performance target. So that's what we're reporting on here.
Councillor Kempton.
Yeah. Look, one thing we've got to be quite careful about is what's being reported on here.
Yeah.
What is being reported on here is the results of a business plan, and the business plan says, we'll do 2 gazillion rabbit inspections this year. Did we do 2 gazillion? Yes, we did. Are rabbit numbers increasing or aren't they? That's about whether or not the environmental or resource plan, which we have set up and out of which have come these things that need to be done in our business plan, whether that's effective. So the actual effectiveness of our plans, that is, our resource or environmental plans, is quite separate from us saying, well, we think that to do those things, we need to do 2 gazillion rabbit inspections. And so it is a business plan, and it is not about the effectiveness of our wider environmental and resource planning. And I think we need to keep that in mind and keep the two slightly separated. I just had 2 or 3 points I just wanted to make. It's a relatively minor thing, but potentially has got, you know, significant ramifications, is that the reliability of our pumping systems. You know, we had some revs against those in our flood schemes. Relatively minor things which have got in the road, but I think it's just something that we need to keep working on, because it's not the first time that it's appeared. And the last thing, of course, we need is pumps that don't pump when we want them to pump, because then...
Largely it's outside our control.
So they're all relatively minor things, but there's a number of them just in a wee snowball there, and I'm sure the staff are well aware of that. Yes, we've dragged behind in 1 or 2 things, like river management and so on. Clearly, I think that's pulled back a bit because other things are coming the other way, but we just need to be mindful of that. Minimum flows, is the increase in resourcing and increase in activity level, the rate of that increase, is that's quite difficult to judge whether or not we've actually managed to achieve that. But certainly we've got to keep some tension on. But the other thing too that I think we, in planning in future years, I think we need to keep a little bit more, be a bit more mindful of, is that there are going to be more and more things that are going to be in the unbudgeted line. Because there are going to be more and more things which creep up on us. Mm. And so some contingent, you know, we just need to continue to review our contingent allowances in our plans. And when you look at the 40 or 50% more hotline calls, that's not going to go down. In fact, it'll probably go up exponentially over time. Unbudgeted science work, you know, the lakes come up and we say, well, we better get on with something. Unbudgeted. We haven't seen the end of that. And the likes of your floods and your velvet leaves and so on. So it's just a matter of making sure that our contingent allowances in our plan actually reflect what's happening in the world around us. But other than that, very clear, and I got the information I needed. Thank you.
Any other comment? Councillor Woody?
Just a general sniff test, if you like, overall. I think we've done a bit better this year, actually. and over the whole lot, and there's a lot of work that continues on from one year to another. We know that there's a lot of projects that slip for a number of reasons. We've just heard one in the public transport from a timing perspective, but they're still there, they're underway. But just overall, the sense that I've from this reporting mechanism, I think I just feel we're slightly better off than we have been in some years in the past. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, it certainly gets a pass from me. I think it's a good report.
Yeah. Yeah. And look.
Reasons for targets not being achieved in that, so generally.
Yep. And look forward to it rolling on to the annual report in a couple of weeks' time.
Any further comment? Sorry, Councillor Deacon.
Yeah, I agree with what Councillor Wood has just said. We can give ourselves a bit of a pat on the back for the way in which the council has performed to expectations. But the other thing I took out of going through that report is that our community has done damn well as well.
Mm.
If you look at the measures there, particularly of compliance with all manner of things, whether it be pests and weeds or even rabbit management mechanisms, dairy effluent, the rate of compliance has gone up in the last few years overall, and I think we should give the Otago region a bit of a pat on the back too for the way in which they're managing their own environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Deacon. Any further comment? If not, I'll put the recommendation that this report, 12-month report, be received. Was it moved? No.
Happy to move, Councillor Chair.
Second by Councillor Woodhead. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Next paper is the Clean Heat, Clean Air Initiative. Basically, this report details the history of this program, which goes back to 2007, 2008, when it was called Warm Home Clean Heat Project.
Which report, isn't it?
And the change...
Yeah.
Is that...
You missed the financials for July.
Sorry, I did too.
Yeah.
We'll carry on with this Clean Heat one at the moment. We'll go back to the other one. As I say, that's what the program was about, and it gives the history of that and where we've got to at the moment, and with the linking up with Cozy Homes project. Is there any comment on this? Councillor Lawton, sorry.
Thank you. Just as a question, I guess, is do we foresee that in terms of the role Cozy Homes is playing, that they will continue to play that role with other communities going forward?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I think the word I mean, Mr. McLean's a trustee, but I mean, the intention is that if the model works in Milton, that they will expand it. And certainly our conversation, and Councillor Woodhead was involved in that with the Mayor, was that if we were going to put some contribution in, it needed to be region-wide. So that is the intent. And again, Councillor Woodhead made a comment of some discussions he'd had with some iwi groups at a meeting in Invercargill. Mm. And I think if there are other groups that are doing a similar sort of piece of work, we would be really interested in hearing from them. So if it's Cozy Homes or if it's another group similar, that's something that we are committed to through this funding and would like to get homes that were better insulated and warmer with cleaner burning appliances.
Great. I'll just say here then that given that there was some information that Scott Stevens from Arrowtown was able to provide him, they, as a Arrowtown Clean Air Trust, have 10,000 K sitting in a bank account with no one to steer it right now, and would greatly appreciate any additional support. So if we could find some way of connecting them with the Cozy Home Trust as well, and also he sees that if there was additional sort of regulatory activity in the area, it would also help. So those things coming together. I did send them the new proposed strategy as well. Thank you.
Well, just so we record that, maybe we ask Mr. McLean, and I know Ms. Sutton, you're involved with that Arrowtown group as sort of our representative, so between the two of them to progress that.
Great, happy to pass on any information. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. Councillor Laws.
Yes, can I take you to page 82 and the table that's there?
This relates, as I understand it, to Air Zone 1, which is all the towns in central Otago, I think, plus Milton, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the thing that really intrigued me was that in 2011-12, we spent $634,000, and for the year ended 17, we only spent $90,000. And the question, the obvious question I was going to ask is, why is there that such a dramatic drop off? Is it because we've retrofitted all the homes and all the homes that we've now got to, or is it because we've run out of puff in terms of the education and we're not getting the kind of response from the community that we perhaps should be?
Mr. Deaker? I'm sorry. Mr. Bodecker?
Yeah, I don't think we've run out of puff. We've got plenty of puff. What we have got is once the insulation subsidy went, that combined activity meant that just putting in a clean burner into a house that had no insulation was of less value. So, I think that's the point, and I think that's what the value of the Cozy Homes Trust doing insulation and clean heat is the real benefit, and I think that's what I'm finding. That's what I think. It'll be interesting to see where we get to. But so in terms of our education activities, we ran little mini expos where we would invite all of the heat, the Mitre 10s and Co came, and the heating the plumbers came. So we pushed that really hard through Mr. McLean's directorate. Up until this year, I don't think we stopped our interest in it or our awareness of it, but it lost its value once the insulation bit went.
And that was provided by the government.
Correct.
Yes, okay. Councillor Scott.
Yeah. So just so I've got this clear in my head, we are supporting. Well, in June 2017, the goals of the Cozy Home Trust is to 59 compliant. Replace 50 non-compliant burners in Milton, insulate 50 homes, improve the air quality in Milton, improve health and warmth, and to develop a clean heat, clean air program to be scaled and replicated across the other air zone. So when does that kick off in terms of, the Arrow towns and so forth? Mm. There's 400,000 sitting there. Is that going to be later this year type of thing?
Mr. McLean?
Project that's been run in Milton by the Cozy Homes Trust as a pilot.
Yeah.
So I guess at the end of the first year, the effectiveness of it will be reassessed and see, because insulation is also being subsidised and provided, if there's good strong uptake with both insulation and burners or other clean heat options, then it will be replicated. But assessing the effectiveness of it first, which is something that
you recognise that word?
Yeah.
sounds good. We know it's effective. You look at some of the numbers in the... Yeah. Because the amount of particulate in the air in Air Zone 1 has been halved.
Yeah, correct.
Has been halved. We could sit down now and work out how effective this is actually going to be without having to wait what goes on in Milton. Milton will be slightly unusual, because Milton's slightly unusual.
Explain yourself.
It's not going to be the catalyst for, Airshed 1 in central Otago. I just get on with it.
That's a good point.
Every time a freezing record comes back from Silver Fern Farms, Finnegan, he brings a trailer load over there, coal back.
Okay.
We've got to efficiencies now, we've got to generalisation.
Generalisation is reasonably accurate, I'll tell you that.
Carmen, Councillor Hope.
Thank you. Through the chair, can I just take you back just to what Councillor Law said? What actually happened in 2013? ECA funding was no longer available. Do we know why? Because that's made quite a difference, hasn't it? And I'm surprised, and was it something that we couldn't lobby, or did they even give a reason as to why the funding? Because it seems that it has changed everything a bit, hasn't it?
Sure. Where did you
get there? The government stopped subsidising the ECA warm homes program.
Yeah.
And what's happened here, I think, is more generalisations replicated around the country, Mr. Bodecker. And so the whole package that people were getting
insulation in their houses and a clean heating appliance.
Right.
Just the took the heat out of the...
Actually, yeah. I think I know the answer to that question.
Right.
In 2008, when the National Party first got elected, they had a supply and confidence yep. agreement with the Greens.
With the Greens.
And it was part of that.
Correct.
That this happened. When, yeah. in 2011, they didn't need the Greens anymore.
Yep.
So this went into abeyance.
Yeah.
23rd of September.
Okay, Councillor Woodhead.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Good report. And we've put some serious work into this in the past, and apart from the gentle ribbing of Councillor Scott, yeah, we have made some significant difference to the total loading in our area catchments. We've invested $2.2 million, and there's been a lot more invested by private individuals as well, because, again, it's one of those things that's jointly funded. But I've just got a sense that things are coming together quite nicely. Hopefully the Crown pulls up its socks and completes its part of the deal, in that we've got a strategy, which we'll be discussing shortly. So ORC's reviewing where we're at further down the track. Hopefully the Crown completes its review of the National Environmental Standard, which is underway. There's a well underway, I understand, near completion. And we've got a trust that's actually been set up that can operate across the whole region, Mr. McLeod. And it's grown out of Dunedin, but has potential. So, over the next 6 months, hopefully, we can pick this up again and move forward with a new strategy and a new airplane.
Okay, we have a report. That this report be received?
Chairman.
Seconded by Councillor Hope. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carry. Sorry, back to page 73, financial report for the month of July.
Move it.
Also move.
So move, seconded by Councillor Noon. Any discussion on that? It's pretty straightforward.
Mm.
Things are ticking along okay.
1 month.
No discussion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Minutes of the Audit and Risk Subcommittee. We're on to part D. No, not this bit. Part D is an open committee. Are there any comments on those minutes? You weren't happy? Actually, I just have one question. Why do we receive these minutes now as opposed to a bit earlier?
Simple answer is we didn't get them ready for the last meeting. They should have gone to the previous meeting.
That's okay.
And we missed the deadline.
That's all right. No, that's okay, because the memory does get a wee bit vaguer as time ticks, but that's okay. Councillor Robertson.
I'll just move the minutes, thanks.
Yep. Seconded by Councillor Noon. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. I'll move on to Part E, public excluded part of the Audit and Risk Committee minutes. I move we go into committee.
Seconded, Mr. Chairman.
By Councillor Woodhead. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Carried. The minutes are in your drop box in a separate section.